plumbing the depths and finding that, yes, there is a deep state. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle of Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Miles.
Hey, Barry, it's great to be back with you in this odd-weathered week. Can't seem to get away from the rain thing. I wasn't aware we'd move to the rainforest.
Well, you know, it, every once in a while, the polarity of the Earth switches and things rotate on its side. And so we end up in a tropical zone. And I'm laughing because I remember reading a book of fiction that was the entire premise of the book of fiction was that the
pole
Earth's
shifted.
Magnetic poles were going to realign and all this catastrophe.
Magnetic poles aligning is a real thing. And when that happens, it can create havoc. But it won't. And it may have an effect on the weather. We don't know. You know, it's interesting. By the way, this is our show for Saturday, September 15th, 2018. Mm-hmm. Throw that in for our timestamp. That's why we're crabbing about the weather. Go back and look at it. And our prayers, by the way, everybody should be praying for the folks on the North and South Carolina and Virginia coasts. Because as of this recording, the hurricane has not hit yet. It has stalled outside in the Atlantic waters, and as it stalled, the waters are colder up north than they are down south, and it has begun to drop strength. However, it is still a gigantic, powerful storm, and when it hits, it's going to dump. It's going to be disastrous for those who have not left, and it will be disastrous for those who have left because their property will be. No one will escape some form of property damage. And it will take, you know, as it always does, it'll take months to recover. And I think we'll get into more of some of the things that will, when we talk about our topic today, we'll delve into that a little further. But again, right now, all you can do is pray and think about what you'll be able to do to help give relief to those stricken areas. And it's interesting. I walked in the post office yesterday to send out some of my packages that I ship out every day. And the postman said, hey, I handed him an express mail package. He goes, have you got anything going to Hawaii or Virginia? And I said, no. And I know why you're asking. I know Hawaii's about to get hit by either a tropical storm or a typhoon. And if you don't know the difference between a typhoon and a hurricane, there isn't any difference. It's what hemisphere you're in, basically. A typhoon is a hurricane. So I said, no, I don't. However, I said, I got a call from Coastal Carolina for an order yesterday, which would have been Tuesday. I said, you're having me send you an order to Coastal California today. Yes. Shouldn't you be leaving? And she laughed and she goes, we will be.
Right.
We're leaving. And I said, well, you're kind of, shaving it a little close, aren't you? I said, I'd be on the road already because I know how this works. Everybody waits till the last minute and the roads are absolutely clogged. So, you know, that this is the way people think, that they want to hold on to the last minute. And you know what? Guess who's one of the worst among those? Me. Me. I'm always last minute, Larry, on some of that stuff. So, again, prayers for our friends on the Southeast Coast. And even our enemies on the Southeast Coast, because this is not something you would wish on people you dislike either.
Well, no, of course not.
We don't have any enemies, Barry. We have nothing. We have no one but friends.
Well, and that's good.
Yes.
And it's a good thing, you know, but you got to be careful because even the scripture says a man of many friends must show himself friendly.
That's right.
And that's not a positive reference in scripture. So you have to, you know, a friend closer than a brother is Christ. So you always have to have Christ first. So.
Right.
So anyhow, no, it's interesting because you said that, you know, we wouldn't wish this on our enemies. But there are some people who are blaming individuals for things that haven't even occurred yet. And I take that, and it's like, you know, sometimes when we're, you know, looking through the various media we look at in order to, you know, prep for the program, in order to kind of keep ourselves up to speed on what's going on, sometimes we run across some things that are just, well, absolutely ludicrous. And, wow, you know what? I have run across a few of those things this week. I think it was very interesting because as the announcement started that this hurricane was starting to track like it was going to hit the U.S. mainland, a number of things started happening. And, you know, as I mentioned to you the other day on a phone call, I live very near an interstate highway, U.S. Route 35, which yep. runs down and goes, you know, into and through parts of West Virginia, et cetera. And over the last couple of days, 35 has had more traffic on it than I've seen in a long time. But most of the traffic had a very similar theme. They were all big box, truck-like entities with boom cranes, with big reels, with toolboxes mounted to the side. And all of them shared similar things, logos on the sides of the trucks. Every one of the logos from a company that deals with electric and power. And I'm not talking federal government. I'm talking private companies. I saw Duke Energy. I can't even remember how many I saw, but I mean everything from the big mega corporations all the way down to like the small regional mom and pop kind of electric outfits, including, you know,
rural.
You know, we're on a co-op here, the rural.
Yeah.
So
rural electric and
truck after truck after truck after truck heading south on 35 because that runs us right down to 6477, which you can take straight down to the Carolinas.
Yep. Yep.
Not one or two trucks per company, Chuck. 4, 5, 8 trucks filled with workers all heading down there to be there for when the hurricane hits so that they can get on the ground and start fixing and repairing. Now, if you think about this, Chuck, we've had a number of hurricanes that have hit land in the U.S. And yes, we've had, you know, companies who've responded before. But I keep, you know, being the politically minded kind of guy like I am, I kind of keep track of these things that are going on around me and kind of indexing them to, okay, what's happening politically? Well, again, this is the first time I've ever seen this big of a response from somebody. And I mean, I saw license plates from Wisconsin, Indiana, Michigan, you name it. Flooding in from the north, coming down to the south. And I mean, truck after truck after truck. As I'm driving down 35, I mean, I must have gone past 24 trucks that were from 5 or 6 different electric companies. All over the country, all heading south.
Yep.
I've never seen this before, even when we had other hurricanes before. You know, because I've lived in this area for a while, and, you know, there have been other hurricanes that have hit in various areas and, you know, in the Gulf of Mexico basins and in Louisiana and every place else, and I've never seen the like. Now, granted, I mean, if you're going over toward Louisiana, they take a little bit different route. But I travel a lot, Chuck, and I see these kind of things. I've never seen this kind of response. And, you know, I have to assume that part of that response is the fact that these companies feel, well, first of all, they feel a social conscience to help those who are hurting, even if it's not in their own service areas. But number two, you know, it costs money to do this.
Oh, yeah, it does.
I'm sure some wag will be like, well, FEMA will just reimburse them for all their expenses. And it's like, well, that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah, that's not true. Yeah.
That's not really true. But the point is that something did happen, and it's called tax reform. And you saw a number of these companies talking about refiring up plants and hiring workers and building new facilities and new infrastructure. And I think that really they're looking at they now have more flexibility to do these kind of things if they, you know, when something happens. And of course, I'm sure people push back on that and say, you know, I'm pipe dream and I'm, you know, in the bag for Trump. But anybody who knows me knows that that's not the case.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. I've never
been in the bag for Trump. But I have to say, I got to defend the president on this one just a little bit, because what happened was is that Congressman Luis Gutierrez, who's out of Chicago, I believe, because they were looking to him to run for mayor of Chicago now that Rahm Emanuel has stated he's not running again. But Gutierrez, you know, announced he's not going to run for Chicago mayor, but he took some time in order to blast President Donald Trump for his lack of response to the hurricane.
Yes, lack of response to the hurricane.
Okay, and I have to stop for a second and say, okay, Representative Gutierrez, do you want Donald Trump to paddle out on a rowboat and, you know, get out in the middle of the Atlantic and put his hands up and tell the hurricane to stop? Because that's the only thing that's the only response that you could do right at the moment, you know? You can't.
Here's the problem.
Until the hurricane actually hits and causes damage, and you know what the damage is, can you have a response? Now the point is, you've already got things are moving. Like I said, the vast numbers of trucks and supplies that are heading to the Carolinas right now, the number of places that are taking in people who are fleeing from those areas and heading north. My mother works as a kitchen manager for a hotel here in town, and she said their rooms are filled up, and it's mainly people who have left those areas and have come up, and they're staying there. So, you know, there's an awful lot going on to assist before anything happens. And the nice thing about it is, Chuck, it's not FEMA. It's not a federal government commandeering or the National Guard commandeering anything to happen. It's private enterprise and initiative taking place right now. Now, the reason why Gutierrez is saying this not only is because it's an easy shot to take at a sitting member of the opposition party in the presidency, and you're a leftist Democrat. And Gutierrez is also of, you know, Latino descent. And, of course, he brings up in the same breath the whole idea about how horrible Trump's response was to Puerto Rico and the hurricane that they had there. You mentioned this the other day, Chuck.
Yeah, right.
What's the big difference between a hurricane hitting Puerto Rico and a hurricane hitting the Carolinas?
Well, there won't be any box trucks driving down from the north to go aid in hooking the wiring back up because, well, we haven't. The power companies have not developed submarine vehicles yet. The box trucks don't float, and they do sink, but they won't run underwater. The fact is that if that kind of an effort was made, it would have to come in by ship or plane, and it's a multi-day journey by ship, and that's really the way to move large amounts of stuff. But you can get people you can still get large quantities in by plane, and that's exactly what happened. That's not going to happen in this case. Now, what happened when that kind of effort was made? Well, the fact is that I can be pilloried for this. I don't care. Puerto Rico is one of the most corrupt places on earth. Ask anyone who has lived there or worked there. It is incredibly corrupt. There are bribes for everything. When stuff comes in, it gets stolen right and left. And I'm sorry, folks, if you're Puerto Rican in origin, you probably know that what I'm saying is not wrong. The fact is that caches of things that came in over a year, when that hurricane hit last year, I'm trying to remember what month it hit in, but are being found that were stolen, like water. Thousands and thousands of gallons of potable water in plastic containers that was stolen and hidden away for whatever reason, and is now questionably whether it's still good or not. That kind of stuff happens all over the place. It has a parallel. It has parallels all over the third world. Relief gets sent. It either rots on the dock because there's no infrastructure to distribute it, or it gets stolen and sold at a premium. Is it American corporations that are stealing it and distributing it at a premium? No, American corporations have usually donated the stuff. That's the problem in the thinking that we have. The people that hate profit, hate private companies, want everything to be socialist and run by the government. The fact is that one of the worst players in Puerto Rico was the mayor of San Juan, who, there's an old saying about Abraham Lincoln talking about his original Secretary of War, was a Pennsylvania Republican crony named Simon P. Cameron. Okay. And Lincoln, he was basically forced on Lincoln, and Lincoln once said of him that he was so corrupt, the only thing he wouldn't steal was a hot stove. Well, I'm not sure we're that bad on the mayor of Puerto Rico, but she has been under investigation for corruption in office.
I was going to say for stealing a hot stove.
For essentially, and yeah, stealing a hot stove, more or less. That's one of the problems you run into. It is absolutely endemic in that culture down there. And you cannot blame the United States government for local government failing to cooperate and essentially trying to profiteer on the charity given and the handouts given by the federal government and by private corporation. The smartest thing a company could do is give the stuff away, but say, our people will distribute it. We're not going to rely on local distribution chain. We'll distribute it. You tell us where the need is, we'll make sure it gets there. Because in many cases, people will be charged to receive aid.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem you run into. And there are people, I had a friend who spent a lot of time after Katrina in, 2005, right? So it's 13 years ago. And he said the difference in the way things worked between the people that they were helping on the north side of Lake Pontchartrain, which is right there where New Orleans is, on the north side of Lake Pontchartrain versus the city, was marked. The people in the city were sitting around waiting for someone to come do all the work, clean out their houses and muck them out and throw all the garbage away. They're waiting for someone from the government to do it. The people on the north side, the people who were disparaged in newspapers for being the people with the money and, you know, blah, blah, blah. They were busily throwing away the things that needed to be done so they could get ready to rebuild their homes.
Imagine that.
Imagine that. Why? Because those people understood that nobody was going to come do it for them. If they wanted it done, they had to get it done. And I've also heard, basically, I've read comparisons, I've read articles comparing the response in, for instance, South Texas, where they get Gulf hurricanes. The response in South Texas versus the response in New Orleans and some areas of Florida where it gets hit. Again, some places people just sit and wait for the government to come do all the work, or some volunteer to come do all the work. It's one thing to sit on your porch and go, oh my gosh, where do I start? But the whole point is that you, at some point, you say, well, we start at the beginning. And you just start hauling carpet out. And you start tearing out your drywall. And you start any ruined appliances you put out on the corner for pickup. And if nobody comes and picks it up, you take it to the dump. That's what goes on in Texas. In a lot of cases. In New Orleans, there are still people living in FEMA trailers waiting for someone to come rebuild their house.
Wow.
That doesn't work.
No, it does not.
No, and you cannot blame Donald Trump for that particular attitude. Where does that attitude come from? It comes from the idea that somehow the government is your guardian. It is your protector. It is supposed to be your protector, but what's it supposed to protect you from? Predators. These people are saying, no, it's my provider. It's supposed to come and do all these things for me. That's a vastly different attitude.
Absolutely. That is a definite different mindset.
Well, which is the more biblical attitude?
Again, that's the mindset of a Luis Gutierrez.
Exactly.
You haven't had an adequate enough response to the hurricane. You're not helping people enough. And it's like, okay, first of all, we know that there are going to be people in this area with a hurricane of whatever level coming in who are, for whatever reason, one way or the other, whether they just don't think they can, if they're not physically capable to, or they're not financially able to, they don't feel like they can leave their home. And so, yes, somebody's going to have to come in and probably help those people or get them somewhere to shelter or whatever in order to get them out of the path of the incredible danger that they could be in. But there are many folks who basically are just sitting around or like waiting for government to tell them what to do. Now, that is something that, you know, government's not really going to be able to adequately provide anything there. And really, you know, you have to basically, as you mentioned, like with your example in Louisiana, you got to take the thing into your own hands and do what you can do in order to protect, secure or provide or prepare without government's intervention. And then after it's all over with, then there can be an understanding of, okay, well, try to do everything you can do, and yet your place or whatever was very, very damaged by it, and what private insurance won't cover, then, you know, possibly we work on figuring out a way to make it...
We make up
a difference there. But to start with, government's responsible for all of it, and they're responsible for basically doing everything for me. I'm sorry, that just doesn't work very well.
Barry, most of the country's history, there was no government relief. If you got hit by a storm, you got hit by a storm. There was no declaration of disaster and that kind of thing, and federal money pouring into a state. If there was anything to come in, it would come in through private channels.
Yeah.
And basically, bureaucratic types decided, wouldn't it be better if it was all centrally administered and handed out by the government? Well, the answer is, as usual in these cases, the answer is no. It isn't better.
Right, exactly. No.
And Puerto Rico and New Orleans after Katrina and all that stuff. I mean, look, Ray Nagin ended up going to jail over some of this stuff. If you don't know who Ray Nagin was, he was the... he was the mayor of New Orleans, who fled to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, to get away from the hurricane. Meanwhile, he had thousands of people, who ended up in the Superdome. I can't imagine anything worse than riding out a hurricane in the Superdome, and the aftermath, because they were in there for days and days and days and days.
Yes, it was. From what I heard from reports from people who were part of the cleanup, it was amazing how
awful it was,
how trashed the place was.
Yeah, and not only that, those of us who are old enough remember the school buses sitting flooded in lots. Why weren't people loaded onto those school buses and headed north? Well, because government, in its infinite wisdom, had no plan to do that. And if it's not planned, you can't do it.
Yeah.
Why didn't Ray Nagin sit there and say, okay, those are going to get flooded out. We need to get people out of here. We're confiscating the buses. We're commandeering those buses for a temporary time.
Because it was easier to do nothing and then blame higher ups, which is what he blamed the governor and blamed George Bush at the time as president for their lack of response. When honestly, the lack of response was his.
From his comfy hotel room paid for by taxpayers' dollars in Baton Rouge.
Yep.
It's amazing the particular attitude about things. There are, vast differences around the country. And really, when we say we're one country, I always laugh at that. No, we're not. No, we're not. And that gets seen. That is what we're living right now, is the fact that we're at least two major divisions. And I think there are far more than that, because You try and mix together people from the Northeast with people from the far West, and I don't mean coastal. I mean Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, New Mexico, Arizona, Texas, Kansas, that kind of thing. They don't mix. There's not open warfare, but the cultures are so different. that they don't fit together well. The southeast coast does not fit together with the northeast coast. Even on the west coast, Oregon people are, believe it or not, are odder than Californians, which is a difficult thing to say considering I just got back from a week in California. But Oregonians are in Washington. They're all, everybody, you know, we're held together by this this thread of nationalism, which, interestingly enough, the deep staters want to get us to feel the same way about international feeling. In other words, the elimination of the of nations in favor of nations being mere administrative districts inside of a global governance. And I'm not paranoid in saying that. That's been a goal, an openly stated goal for decades. Bring the world together into one, under one governmental umbrella. Well, I think we see that we're really not compatible and shouldn't be under. I understand the idea of global organizations to attempt to keep peace. I don't mean the UN. I don't mean UN peacekeeping. I mean, as a matter of discussing our differences and keeping border skirmishes from blowing up into 4-year-long tens of millions of people dead because of the stupidity of the leaders who couldn't see it coming.
Right.
That's part of what I'm talking about. You know, part of what our whole theme is today is this whole idea that there are multiple countries here, and we need to make concessions, and we need to help one another. We cannot be blamed if the stuff that we provide gets stolen or abused. It's not the federal government's fault. It's not Donald Trump's fault specifically that Puerto Rico abused the help that they got.
Mm-hmm.
And there were, yes, did a lot of people die after the storm? Yeah, they fell off roofs. There was an interview yesterday, Andrea Mitchell trying to get somebody from FEMA to say, to come down on Donald Trump and what a horrible mistake he had made in Puerto Rico and why all these deaths after the storm. And I'm like, that's easy. People get up to repair their roofs and fall off. People do all kinds of, people are electrocuted trying to fix their wiring.
Yep.
And they don't know what they're doing. You know, there's all kinds of reasons. People have heart attacks cleaning out their house. So all these deaths that come after aren't necessarily disease or starvation, which is the case they're trying to make. It's all kinds of incidental injuries. People that the traffic lights don't work, and so people run through intersections and get killed in car wrecks. You know, people step on live electric lines that everybody thought were off, and they aren't. Which is why they tell you after a hurricane, don't mess with the electrical lines.
Yeah, exactly.
Leave them where they are, and the technicians will come along and turn the breakers off and fix the wires and turn the breaker back on. Don't try anything yourself. You know, there in the wires that are coming in outside your little transformer can there, it's about 20,000 volts. Well, I have seen what happens to linemen who do the wrong thing, working on 20,000 volt wires. It's not pretty.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, again, this is a situation where we're keeping in prayer everybody, and of course, after we see what the extent of damage is, then there would be an ability for not only the government, whether it's the state government in the Carolinas or the federal government, to assess, and there's also time for private companies and private contractors and families and friends to assess how to go about helping to restore and repair. So, you know, we're looking at that, but again, you know, this is a situation, Chuck, and the reason why I brought Gutierrez into the mix is because of the fact that, you know, we're used to people like him and Nancy Pelosi and Maxine Waters with her mantric chant of impeachment, 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 all trying to attack the presidential administration because, A, you know, they hold a completely opposite philosophical worldview and political views than the sitting president. B, they're of the opposition party, so to speak, the Democrats versus the Republicans. And actually, yeah, I have to like qualify that because there are many Republicans who are doing the exact same thing because they're of the opposition party to the president.
Right. This is not party-based.
The establishment go-along-to-get-along Republicans versus the, oh, we do believe that we do have a platform, we do have principles, and there are things that are good for the country and we're going to try to get done, which is where the president sits. So you get that, but we're used to those, Chuck, because they're obvious. They're out there. They're getting in front of microphones. They're doing press conferences. They're taking every chance they can, even if it's on an unrelated topic like announcing you're not running for the mayor of Chicago, to go after their hated enemy. But there's another branch of this whole thing, and I would have to say that up until about last week, many people, especially those folks who I just named, both the Democrats and the Republicans, would scoff and deride for anybody, especially President Trump, from claiming that there was such a thing as, well, what he calls a deep state, that there is an entrenched opposition force within government that doesn't do press conferences, that doesn't get in front of cameras, that doesn't, want spotlights, but they are behind the scenes inside the agencies and inside the cabinet offices, you know, whether they're cabinet secretaries or they're down further, as we saw with the FBI with Peter Strzok and Lisa Page and others, that are actively working to undermine the ability of this administration to do the things that they say they want to do for the American people. And, you know, okay, folks, let's just be quite frankly clear and honest. Donald Trump has kept more of his campaign promises to the American people in the first 20 months of his presidency than any of his predecessors did during their entire 4 or 8 year terms. Bar none. Chuck, can you go back and think of it other than Calvin Coolidge? Can you think of any president that has kept the vast majority of their campaign promises if it were in their power in any way to do so?
No. No. There are some who claim that they were tiered promises. If we implement my policies, then this and this and this will happen. So you implement the policies, which was part of the promise, and then this and this and this not only didn't happen, but the opposite happened. Case in point, Barack Obama. If we implement my climate and economic policies, the recovery will get stronger. Well, we implemented it. Thanks to Republican go-along-to-get-alongers, despite the propaganda to the contrary.
Okay, yeah.
We got at Barack Obama's economic policies.
Yeah, and we saw what it did to the country.
And we saw what it did to the country. Not only did the recovery continue, it got slower and slower and slower until we were on the brink of a recession in January of 2017.
Yes, we were.
There's no doubt about that. I saw the signs.
A funny thing happened in January 2017.
That's right. January 20th. Amazing how that works. Suddenly we got a new president who basically came in and began to dismantle all the things that were implemented, by the way, not by necessarily by congressional action, but by executive order.
Executive order. Now, these are the same things that Barack Obama are now saying that Trump's taking credit for all of his work this recovery that's happened 2 years after he left office.
If you'll recall, he spent 4 years blaming his foibles
predecessor on George W. Bush. Were going wrong. So the last 4 years now, it's, you know, even though nothing good happened, now that things are happening, well, it's all because of what I did.
Yeah, I set I laid the groundwork.
The man's the biggest narcissist on the face of the planet. I mean, everybody thinks Trump is, but let's not get ourselves.
Right.
When he comes back on the scene to go out stumping for candidates, he refers to himself 106 times in one speech. Okay? Let's just not kid ourselves. But, Chuck, you're right, because what happened in January 2017 was a change of an administration who came in guns blazing, with the pen, making a number of changes executively that he could do constitutionally. And what happened is, and there's an interesting article, a little data point over on Breitbart, that the prices, what's called the producer price index, and this is the prices that domestic U.S. businesses receive for their goods and services, had dropped a little bit, okay? So that means prices are down. It just dropped, like, a seasonally adjusted, they say, 0.1% in August from a month earlier, okay? That doesn't sound like much, right? Well, economists had forecast that it was going to be a 0.2% increase for the month.
Right.
So that's a significant change, but it's also the first monthly decline since a 0.1% drop in February of 2017. So that means, folks, that as much as people want to scream about Trump's tariffs going to cause inflation and prices are going up, prices are going down. Because as they adjust, and that businesses are adjusting to this, given their tax and regulatory reforms that have been happening, they're able to absorb, even if some of their costs are a little bit higher because of the tariff issue, or they're finding other places to get the materials they need.
Exactly.
Those are all good things.
They're reestablishing. What they're doing is reestablishing supply lines with countries we've renegotiated the awful, awful, awful trade agreements with. Exactly. And part of the issue is, for instance, why was China ever allowed in the World Trade Organization?
Yep.
I mean, China has done exactly what people who predicted what they would do, and that is they basically used it as a means to cudgel Asia into their own sphere and attempt to take it out of what amounts to a world sphere. We're a major trading partner with lots of Asia, and they're the Chinese are infamous for that kind of trade policy. I can tell you in my own business, what has happened is because of the WTO, China's inclusion in the WTO, they have come in and bought up American companies that used to process and manufacture extracts and vitamins and things that I use in my business. Vitamin C, for instance. Okay. We use natural vitamin C. Well, the Chinese bought up all the domestic manufacturers and moved manufacturing to China. Well, what happened to the prices the minute that they had essentially dismantled the American infrastructure? Quadruple.
Yep.
The price of vitamin C quadrupled. Same thing with vitamin B12. Any number of vitamins you can name are basically unavailable in the United States, although, thanks, the Chinese didn't count on this, and they didn't count on Donald Trump. Domestic manufacturing is beginning again, but it's small mom and pop outlets. That's fine. The price will be higher, but it won't be as high as China. Now, what will China do in order to kill those companies? They'll pull the rug out from their own pricing to try to kill them off. I've told some of my manufacturers I'd rather buy from the American at a slightly higher price from the domestic manufacturer. Because I know what'll happen once those guys are out of business again. So this is in discussion. That's the kind of thing that happens, Barry, it's the law of unintended consequences when you implement bad trade agreements. You know, there have been companies that pulled up stakes and moved to Mexico. I can remember there was a company called Lionel Train. Did you ever have a Lionel Train when you were a kid?
Oh, yes.
When I was living in Michigan, that was a Michigan company. And they just pulled up lock, stock, and barrel, closed the plant, moved it lock, stock, and barrel to Mexico because the labor was cheaper. And the Mexicans were happy to have the jobs. Even at a lower cost, those guys were living high on the hog because the amount of money they were making made them, middle class. Because Mexico does have a growing middle class. It's kind of a new thing in their economy. They've always had kind of a two-tier system. What happened? Well, within about a year and a half, I remember Lionel came tumbling back. Why?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because essentially they couldn't get the same skill level that they could get from their Michigan workers. So they came back and moved a bunch of the operation back to Michigan. That's been, oh gosh, in the early 90s maybe?
Mm-hmm.
And the ability to do that was because of NAFTA. NAFTA, which essentially Donald Trump is in the middle of renegotiating. Why? Because it was grossly disadvantageous to the United States.
It was, absolutely.
This thing about Canadian trade, and Justin Trudeau is going to end up in trouble over this because Canadians know where the bread is buttered. Who's their major trading partner? It's us.
Yeah, exactly.
It's us. I mean, a lot of cars that are sold here, built in Canada, or at least parts. I think that there's a couple plants where they're building cars for us and that kind of thing. Well, it's terribly advantageous to the Canadians, and we want to level the playing field. Now, do you need to provide some allowance for the fact that it's a much smaller economy? Yeah, you do, but you still don't give the store away, which we did in NAFTA.
That's true.
And Justin Trudeau is making a big deal. Oh, he insulted Canada. You know, talking about Trump, he insulted Canada and Canadian workers and blah, blah, blah. He didn't do any such thing. What he's saying is that the trade agreements have to have some advantages for America as well.
Right. That's right.
Not just advantages for Canada. It has to have some advantages for America as well, for the United States. And what negotiations broke down over was, believe it or not, dairy subsidies.
That doesn't really surprise me that much. I really just hate to say it, but it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. Apparently, Canada basically, essentially, just subsidizes the heck out of the price of milk. And we said, you're not going to be able to export that stuff here. You know, we've got to be able to have our American farmers compete. And we can't do it with you giving the store away. That's the dirty secret. For instance, Mercedes-Benz that gets sold here.
Yes.
The German government subsidizes the life out of the sales of cars in the American market. Donald Trump's saying, no, you can't do that. We're going to tax it at the same rate you're subsidizing.
Yep. And that's the way to protect American manufacturing.
Exactly. If you want a Mercedes, you're willing to pay the extra price for it.
You know, it's just like the article that I was talking about where this data came from talked about the whole idea that, yes, if you look over the month and over like the last year or so, that the steel production prices have gone up in the U.S. But one of the other things that has stopped happening is the dumping of cheap foreign steel in the U.S. because of the tariffs. So even though those prices are going up for the U.S. steel production, they will level off, and U.S. steel will be able to hire people and put them to work, as we're seeing them doing, as you have announcements of $750 million facelifts for the steel plant in Gary, Indiana, $300 million facelift for the one in Youngstown. steel companies are coming back because even though their costs are going up, they now have the ability to have honest market pricing.
And you know,
instead of subsidized free trade tariff, you know, removed foreign dumping on the U.S. market of all of that steel.
And you know who one of the worst players was on that? It was a combination of China and Canada.
I was going to say China and Canada. Yeah,
China would ship raw steel to Canada, who would do some, you know, put a coating on it or something, stamp it made in Canada, and dump it here cheaper than American
can produce it domestically.
Can produce it domestically under NAFTA. Well, okay, that's one of the things that's going away. That's not going to be allowed anymore. You can't do some minor thing and call it made in Canada and get under the NAFTA umbrella. If it's made in China, it's made in China. And you're going to have to market that way. And the Chinese are essentially, because they're subsidizing their manufacturing, there will be a tariff attached. Mm-hmm. Look, Donald Trump knew all this, and he knew prices were probably going to go up as a result of it.
Yes.
That is exactly why there's a tax cut. He knows how to play the game on a tariff war.
And it is this issue. This is another one of the issues that has created this whole move, because everything he's doing is being, you know, he's being called, proved right. They said if we get fair trade agreements and we protect American industry, you know, we're going to see more jobs, better economic growth, and guess what? That's what's happening.
Yes.
And the establishment, both on the Democrat and the Republican side, who have played go along to get along for decades while watching the American economy swirl around the ceramic bowl, can't stand it. And so what has happened now is the deep state. There's another thing that Trump's been proved right on. He has come out and said all along that there's a deep state that's working, you know, part of the swamp, but these are more, I guess, more actively corrupt, who are trying to basically destroy the country.
Well, they want to bring us into, global governance is the goal.
As we mentioned, the New York Times last week published an op-ed piece by an anonymous writer, you know, wouldn't identify themselves, who basically identified, the only way they identified themselves was that they were a senior administration official, and who basically all but jumped up and down with neon batons, screaming and yelling, look at me, we're the deep state.
Yeah, exactly. Admitting,
yes, there are people inside the administration and various levels who are actively working to undermine this president and the reforms and the economic recovery that he's pushing, because they are so scared that somehow America will not be the weak sister in the global community anymore.
And yet you've got guys like Chuck Todd out there telling anybody who will listen that the deep state is a right-wing paranoid fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, all you have to do is go out and put in a Google search, deep state paranoia, and read some of the articles. But you know where I see an important thing, a big discussion on this, where they talk about that it is just paying no attention, nothing to see here, move along. Deep state persecution or paranoia, from the Chicago Council on Global Affairs.
Woohoo!
Now, what do you think their come down is on this?
Oh, that Trump's unfit for office and he should be impeached and removed from office. Of course, because Trump's changing the global environment.
Exactly.
No longer is America playing the whipping boy to the foreign interests. The American interests are coming back, and they don't know how to handle it because they know they can't do anything about it.
Well, if you were
like places like China and even Canada and other places, their economies are so tied to ours that they cannot out and out try to damage the American economy straightforwardly.
Think about
it'll tank their own economies.
In the 90s, we were being told that we were going to be overtaken by the EU. And anybody who was paying attention said, well, now, wait a minute. If the EU is all that big a powerhouse, why aren't they running their own defense? Because if you recall, the Soviet Union was still considered a threat, and yet who was the main contributor to the defense cost against the Soviet Union to protect Europe? The United States of America.
I was going to say the U.S., yeah.
There were some big players, Germany, but then again, their big thing was to let us have bases on their soil. Barry, this deep state thing, these guys are globalists.
Yep.
And when you've got these people writing articles in Time magazine and all these about the paranoia of the deep state, and yet we can see the deep state in operation. We have anybody who's paid attention to the whole Russia collusion thing and understands that there was collusion with Russia, and it was on the part of Hillary Clinton.
Yes.
Not the Donald Trump campaign. And the fact is that they hooked up with the National Security Agency, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the CIA, numerous other intelligence agencies to gin up this Russian dossier, which has turned out to be just simply a joke. And who was the main intelligence asset that came up with this thing? It's a guy from MI6. They keep calling him a former MI6 asset, a former MI6. There is no such thing as a former MI6 asset. It's like being in the CIA in the upper intelligence levels. You're never former. Why? Because you know too much.
That's right.
You're always under scrutiny, because if you flip, you know too much, and bad things will happen to you. Mm-hmm. So this MI6 guy basically goes out, comes up with this story. What was the purpose of it? The whole purpose was to create a situation where it looked like Donald Trump had colluded with some members of the Russian government to somehow undermine the election process. Look, that's a paranoid fantasy. There is no way that, for instance, some laughably bad articles that floated around on Facebook changed any votes.
No. Well, and the thing is, going back to this whole thing, because the New York Times made such a big deal out of it, this inside deep,
right,
senior White House official, senior administration official, basically, signaling, yeah, Donald Trump's been right all along. There is a deep state, and we are trying to
that's exactly what
thank him. But yeah. And he comes out. So I go back to a piece by John Nolte over at Breitbart, and I love this. And my wife was asking me, it's like, you're always talking about how Trump outthinks everybody else and how he's always like three steps ahead of them. How, can you explain some things? So I sent her this article. Now, okay, granted, we'll put this article up. It does have some language in it. Nolte is a little bit more of a libertarian. So
he's spicy,
He's a little spicy. But, he says, what he says he leads with, he says, Trump has done nothing wrong. Remember that. And he says, as the corrupt media fabricate a fitness for office crisis, remember, Trump has done nothing wrong. And he says, nobody's made a single allegation that Trump's done anything wrong. He says, all this ginned up media hysteria, all this never Trump nonsense about the 25th Amendment, all this resistance adulation over a glory seeking narcissist hiding behind the skirts of the New York Times. Where is this narcissist's allegation of wrongdoing? He says, go back and read the piece. And of course, we'll put that up on online as well. He says, there's no allegation of wrongdoing on Trump's part, just a saboteur with no respect for the Constitution or our electoral system, and even less respect for the American people. Trying to basically create a mess. And I like this, because you mentioned a name here a minute ago, and I always want to tie this in. He says, all this hand-wringing, all this frenzy, all this invented concern over chaos in the White House over this unprecedented moment in presidential history, what's it really about? No, ask yourself that. Stop for a moment. Take a breath. close your eyes, turn off Chuck Todd, put away the iPhone, and ask yourself, what is this concocted five-alarm constitutional crisis built on? He says, if you're honest with yourself, you realize that it is built on only one thing, grade A, 100% doo-doo. and he says, look at, so what if everything Bob Woodward says in his book is true and the New York Times says is true? So what? Look at what these failures and liars and grifters are trying to con you with. Because it's got nothing to do with illegality, nothing to do with substance, and everything to do with style. The corrupt establishment is colluding to head fake America into freaking out over Trump's style, while Trump delivers and delivers and delivers on the substance, on things that actually matter. He has an erratic management style, so what? I'm supposed to care? He burns people out, dresses them down, demands they do crazy stuff like at long last win one of these endless neocon wars? So what? I don't care how Trump makes his decisions. I care about the end result of those decisions. And he's like, let's focus on the substance for just a minute. Our economy is booming for the first time in over a decade. Manufacturing jobs are finally coming back. North Korea has stopped launching missiles. The war on terror feels like a bad memory. ISIS is no longer lighting people on fire. Putin's adventurism has been halted. The rule of law is returning to the Supreme Court. Someone is finally paying serious attention to the plight of the working class. We're out of the Paris hoax treaty. The Iran deal is dead. We're not funding the Palestinians. And oh, and by the way, this week Trump kicked them out of D.C. So the Palestinian envoy has been told to leave D.C. We're not transporting billions in cash to terrorist nations. The media are finally being treated like the Democrat operatives they are. The Obamacare mandate is dead. Black and Hispanic unemployment has hit record lows and look at that. Look at all these accomplishments, all the substantive substance above, and tell me again why I'm supposed to give even a scintilla of a care about Trump's style.
Exactly. Look,
I mean, this was absolutely the one of the best, even though with the language, and I apologize for his language.
Right.
And he keeps going on and on and on. And it's like, oh my goodness, this is just, this thing is spot on. Because it's really what it is. It says Trump's enemies in the deep state, the establishment media, and those Vichy Republicans in Never Trump land cannot touch Trump on substance, on his undeniable accomplishments. So they're using anonymous sources and their own self-regard to try to gaslight us into believing style is the only thing that matters.
It's interesting. Okay. We're close to out of time, but I want to make that particular sentence says tons to me. Style over substance.
Yep.
Okay. Let's paint with a broad brush for a minute. Conservatives, real conservatives. I'm not talking about some of these guys who call themselves conservative in Congress and the Never Trumpers and that. To real conservatives, substance matters over style.
Absolutely.
To liberals, style matters over substance.
Right. Doesn't matter what you do as long as you look good doing it.
As long as it looks right and it sounds right when you do it. That's a major thing, Barry. That is a major thing.
It is. He's right. Boiling it down, that is the ultimate. That's where the rubber meets the road, where, you know, bone on bone. The question is, are you upset with the current president because of his what he's done or how he's done it?
Yep.
And I'm with Nolte.
Yeah.
I really don't care how he does it, as long as he stays constitutional.
That's right. I have,
as long as he stays within the Constitution, which he's been doing.
Yes.
I don't care how he does it. The fact that it's getting done is incredibly exciting and incredibly
Well,
motivation.
Unlike his predecessor, with his pen and phone.
Well, let's not say now. Don't make it singular, Chuck.
Oh,
unlike his
predecessors. Yes, yeah.
And I go back and you know where I stop. I'll go all the way back until we get to Calvin Coolidge.
There you go. I'll go back further than that.
You can go back farther than that, but I do believe that Calvin Coolidge is probably the last president we've had that actually treated the Constitution like it meant something.
Yes. Well, and that being said, we're out of time. You know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And I do swear to you folks that I will get back episodes up. My business has been a little crazy, so I will get those up. And I ask that you join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.